enough for him to keep him safe from false worship and sin and immorality, then that tells us that none of us really have excuse. No matter what kind of circumstances we are born into, no matter how much corruption we are thrown into, there's always a conscience in every human being telling him this is not right, this does not suit my soul, this does not suit my life. Huh? So it tells us no matter what kind of conditions brought about on earth, man is never to be excused for his wrongdoing. Because God has created us with a nature and a conscience that will make us feel uneasy when we're doing wrong, even though we are raised in it. Because many youngsters have been raised by the worst parents and in the worst situations, and they have rebelled against the immorality, the decadence and cruelty of their own environment. They broke against it and they left it. Say, I leave it. I don't even want to be here no more. I don't want to live with my own parents. Huh? Talking about you need somebody to come down from heaven and take on our life form and be killed and the blood cleanse us of our sins and all that. No, you don't need no one to come from up there to do that and one right down here to do that. Just any good human being will do that. Yeah, getting a little warm. Thank you. Yes, any good human being will do that. There are a lot of winos who have sacrificed their lives for a person they love.
That's right.
I never did understand that. That we're supposed to worship a man because he said he died for the world. I said, shoot, I'm ready to die for one person. You can have my life for one good person. Not the whole world. If it's the whole world, shoot, I'll get a whole lot of people. I'll stop preaching, get me a congregation. I said, look, we got to die for the world. The world is worth a whole lot of us dying for. Thousands and thousands of men have died just for one nation. See, when you establish a falsehood, it's easy to knock down. And I go right at it, you know, I don't waste no time. Especially when I know that the people have no justification for holding on to lies like that. I have patience with an ignorant person. But a person who would have no justification, I don't believe in wasting no time. Just show him the ridiculousness of it and just get, hey, get in. That's terrible. That somebody believes something like that. Terrible. It is slavery teaching. But it is righteousness to believe in God and the last day. So anyone who doesn't believe in a judgment, anyone who doesn't believe, I'm going by this law, I'm following logic. Anyone who doesn't believe that there's a judgment coming, that there's an end to wrongdoing and you have to account for it someday, one day or another. Anyone who doesn't believe that, they have a moral problem. That's what Allah's saying here. If he says righteousness to do this, then it's unrighteousness to not to do it. He said this is righteousness. So that means if I don't do that, then that's unrighteousness. And unrighteousness is immoral. Is immoral. So if you don't accept the belief, you don't accept the idea that there's coming a judgment and that justice is going to be established, the wrongdoer is going to have to pay, he can't get away. If you don't believe that, you got a moral problem. And I'll tell you what your moral problem is, because I'm your brother. Your moral problem is the fear, the moral weakness to stand up to your own sin and to say, I'm not going to live a life of sin. I'm going to live a life of righteousness. So the absence of your strength to make that commitment, the absence of your strength to stand up like that, make you fear meeting the consequences down the road. So if you say there's a judgment, then you're going to have to change your position. So I'm too weak to change my position, so I'm going to deny that there's a judgment. See, that's what the doctor does. The doctor don't only say you got a problem, but explain it for you. And I'm a doctor. Yes. I like the doctor's work. Don't tell the people they're crazy. Explain why they're crazy. They wasn't born that way. God didn't create them that way. Let him know what happened. Maybe he'll change his mind. And in the angels. Anybody who doesn't believe in angels? I don't believe in no angels. You got a moral problem. You got a moral problem. The angels represent forces or influences that are perfectly obedient to God's rule and orders. That's what the angels represent. Now, to say you don't believe that any creature or any creation or any agent is existing that perfectly obeys God, that's a moral problem. Yeah, that's a moral problem. Not if you're a Muslim, if you're anybody, you got a moral problem. People don't want to accept the unknown that God has revealed because it threatens their security. They are secured in their unrighteousness as long as they don't accept that there's something to condemn it. Or that there's a different situation. That things are not existing as I see them. Things exist differently from what I see. To accept that is to change their position, so they want to hold on to their disbeliefs. It stems from moral weakness, the absence of moral strength in the creature. In the angels and the book. You see, the angels come before the book. Angels come before the book. Why? Because man, before he saw a book, he believed that there were agents out there that were influencing things, and they were part of God's creation and serving God's will. Yes, before he even saw a book, the primitive man don't know how to read. He hadn't even developed the language, but he was fearing the lightning, fearing the thunder, and turning toward God. God, don't let it distract us. Huh? Yes. And he felt that those forces out there were obeying God. There's something behind that. And it's obeying a God. So he would pray to what he thought was behind it and ask its protection from those forces that were carrying out orders without any way to be influenced. Say, hey, I can't influence that to change. I better talk to the one behind it. Say, that doesn't hear me, doesn't respond to me. Say, save on me. Don't send this on me. Delay it for a while. Give me another chance, please. So man has had that belief before he had books. So then the book comes, and the book. See how the belief is progressing? The development of faith, the belief is progressing. The development of taqwa in the human being is progressing. First, that it is not phony. It is not pure ritual. It didn't start that way. Man didn't start by having a ritual. I'm going to pray this object, pray to that. No, it started as a fear and an awareness of a God and a fear to disobey him. That's how it started. And he wasn't phony when he started worshiping that God. He was as innocent as a newborn baby. If he did that, that's what he thought he should do. Oh, God. Whatever he did, that's what he thought was best. He wasn't phony. He wasn't putting on. But later in man's history, when he loses that pure spirit, that pure faith, then it becomes a phony thing. Oh, God. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. We got a sick sister here, God. And she's poor. She got many children, Lord. He didn't start off phony like that. When he first realized that he was threatened and he needed God, he was a for real man. So righteousness is not turning your face to the east and west. That's formality. That's ritual. Huh? Not that ritual and formality is condemned. It's condemned when the substance is not there. The real thing must be there. And then the ritual can be appreciated. But still we don't turn east and west because God is in every direction. As he said in this says in this holy book, for whichever way you turn, you will find the presence of God. And the messengers, and to believe in the messengers, and to spend of your sustenance. So not to believe in the messenger, God can communicate a message to his creature. To not to do that is a moral problem. To not believe that, pardon me, is a moral problem. And to spend of your sustenance. You got money, you got wealth, and you just keep it all for yourself? That's a moral problem. You don't believe in giving nobody any help? You got a moral problem. If it's not righteous, it's not moral. Not morally sound, not morally right. Out of love for him. Because there's some who give and give a lot. Hey man, want $100? Give you $100. That doesn't mean he's moral. That doesn't mean he's morally sound. Because he gave you $100. Maybe he wants you to love him more than you love another buddy you got. His motive could be corrupt. His motive could be sick. Huh? Yes. So many men will give their money, but the motive is sick. That's why the qualification here to come under righteousness is that you give for the love of God. And what is the love of God? God is the embodiment of all purity. God is the embodiment of all that is right and perfect. Huh? So the love for that truth and righteousness and purity and beauty, the love that is in me for such things, for such influences, or for such principles, or for such objects, the love in me for that makes me stand above the pettiness of trying to give you some money so you will love me. Huh? Oh, buddy. See, you don't know. I've been preaching for 400 years. Yeah, as soon as they brought me over here from Jamestown, Virginia, and they put me on the shores, I started preaching. But the white man was so threatening, I was preaching silently. But I've been preaching for about 400 years or more. To spend out of love for him, for God, and for your kin. See, God's first, and for your kin. Now, that's the real God. That says, love me. But you ain't right if you don't love your kin. Huh? Yeah, God said, love me. You should love me. But God never say, love me. God says, there's something wrong with you if you don't love me. He never says, love me. He's too big to ask you to love him. But he just says, hey, something wrong with you if you don't love me. And you'll love your kin. There's something wrong with you if you don't love your kin. I don't mean the relative that took your car, your new car, and you haven't seen him since, and you found out he wrecked it, and then talked bad about your bad mouth. I'm not talking about that relative. You don't have to love him. It didn't say love a bad relative. It said love relatives. You're supposed to love your relatives. So you don't love him now in his state that he's in, but as a relative, you still love him, right? You wish that he would come back from that, change his ways and be right, you know?
Wish you could get things like they used to be again, you know?
Yes. So the love for relative is natural like the love for God. For orphans. See, now here responsibility is coming up, right? Responsibility is growing. Love for kin and for orphans and for the needy and for the wayfarer, the child of the road, doesn't have anywhere to live, or in your town and just on the road, don't have a home to go to. For those who beg, for those who ask for help, and for the ransoming of slaves, for the freeing of slaves. See how the issues of that time are brought into focus? But now we have an issue. The issue of the race is a need for economic representation. Huh? Some kind of economic parity or some kind of economic representation for the race. As a race, we are economically unrepresented. And we have our leaders who are speaking on that need. This is our need. They're right. That is a need. But first things first. You're making more progress with your business life when your morals were better. And most of all, when you had faith in God. For the ransoming of slaves, for the freeing of slaves. To be steadfast in prayer. To be steadfast in prayer. Well, our calm is salat. To be steadfast in prayer. You know, a lot of people, they pray, but they pray in a relaxed position. They pray on their knees, leaning on something. Oh Lord, oh Lord, Lord. Or they pray like this, right? The Muslim begins his prayer not from a relaxed position. He begins his prayer from a position of vigil. Huh? Man stands like this when he's alert. He begins his prayer from a position of vigil. Huh? He's alert. His attentions are alert. His body is rigid. Allahu Akbar. He begins praying from a position of strength. Not a position of weakness. But he, in order to meet his obligation to his Lord, to render himself, he starts, he's rigid and he's confidence and he's firm and he's alert, and then he starts recognizing his God. What does that tell us? It is not the ignorant man, it is not the unestablished man, it is not the man who's down and beaten that recognizes his Lord in the right way, but it's the man who stands up and he's alert. He's the one who recognizes his God best. Yes. And then from that recognition of his God, he is willing then to humble himself as a newborn baby before his Lord. He goes down into sajda, the best position of prayer. But it's the best position, why? It is the best position because the strong man says, my Lord is deserving of my complete submission. It wasn't a weak man that saw that. It was a strong man that saw that. Allahu Akbar. To stand fast, to be steadfast in prayer, and to practice regular charity. Yes. See, now charity coming again, but it's coming after the man has stood as he should. He has stood upright before his Lord. He has stood upright before his Lord with his eyes open in dignity. Huh? His eyes wasn't closed.
his eyes open. Muslim ain't supposed to close his eyes when he started. You open your eyes. Yes, it's wonderful. And now, says, and to be charitable. Why? Because this standing position indicates that this man is no fool. The innocent child without knowledge prays, lying down or any kind of way, or crying, sobbing. But here's a man, he ain't sobbing. He starts off his prayer, he's all together. Look like he's getting ready to go march on the enemy. Right. Or getting ready to defend something, right? And he stands up like that and he declares that God is greater. And begin going through gestures to tell you that I render my complete soul and the spirit and everything in complete submission to that God. Now that's a man that you better think twice about before you come against him. If he's doing that with knowledge, if he's doing that with knowledge, you better think twice before you mess with that man. Because if he can't deal with you, the angels will help him. Yeah, that's a precious man. That's a precious man. If he's doing that with knowledge. Yes. To fulfill contracts. See, such a man, he will meet those obligations. To fulfill contracts. See, the responsibility is coming more home, right? Coming more home. Coming home to the family life. First of kin, the kin. And to your obligation to any human being that needs help, that's suffering or mistreated. Hmm? The slave and the wayfarer. And now to your business acquaintance, your business associates. Hey, you have a contract, you're in some kind of agreement, and you're supposed to carry it out. Hey, you're supposed to be faithful to those contracts. And to be firm and patient during times of pain and suffering. So what Muslim is prepared best for such is the alert, intelligent, open-minded, sanely thinking Muslim. You can't depend on no Holy Ghost congregation to do great things. What did Paul say about them? As much as they criticize Paul, I think a lot of times the reason why so many churches don't like Paul is because Paul said all that talking in tongues ain't nothing but babble. Yes, sir. Ain't nobody understand it but the person that's speaking it. It's not made for communication. It's not intended for communication or edification. Yes, sir. It edifies nothing. He had his faults, but he was right there. So, dear believers, when we begin to feel the bite or the pressure of misfortune, of bad circumstances, we are supposed to reflect on what God has revealed in the Quran. We are supposed to be readers of the Quran. And if you read it often enough, you're going to run upon verses, you're going to come upon verses that will put you back on the right track, that will give you strength again, that will clear your vision for you again. But if you just run into these things that knock you off of your feet and trouble your mind and beat down your spirit, and all you do is just sit somewhere and groan and moan and complain, you never get up. No Muslim should stay down in misery. We may get knocked down, but no Muslim should stay down, because this book will lift you up no matter how great the force was that knocked you down. I know, because I'm still standing. It have kept me up on my feet. And I have run against some terrible things. I lost my mother and my father right behind each other. And just because I took a position for God, people thought I didn't love my mother and didn't love my father. That was a terrible burden to carry while you're waiting on people to see your goodness and understand what you had to do. But I didn't fall down. And to be firm and patient in times of pain and suffering and adversity. People will come against you. Sometimes your best friends will come against you. People that you thought would never turn on you will turn on you. And that's hard to take. But we have to remember that our life and our strength is not our relationship with men and women and boys and girls, but with this Quran and with the Sunnah of Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon it. Turn to that and renew your spirit. Oh, yes. Go on about your constructive work. Such are the people of truth, the God-fearing. وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُتَّقُونَ. Such people, they are the God-fearing. أُولَٰئِكَ الَّذِينَ صَدَقُوا. They are the people who have صَدَقُوا. They are the people who have proven true. They have proven themselves to be true, to be just and true. Yes. So there are many who will claim to be right, many will claim righteousness, many will claim to be true and just. But if they don't meet these requirements, then they are not to be recognized as the person who met those requirements. Those are the ones that we can verify. Yes. You have proved true. So if anyone is tolerating the injustice in the society, claiming themselves to be righteous, but you walk past injustices and you don't do anything, you don't respond, yo, buddy, you are not righteous. Your righteousness is very small. Huh? Your righteousness is thin. Your righteousness is cosmetic. Yeah. But those people who fulfill these requirements in this one verse on righteousness, once they meet those requirements, he has met it in his relationship with his God, he has met it in relationship with the family at home, he has met it in relationship with the stranger in the street, huh? And then trouble and adversity came against him, would make any man just fall down and give up. But he stood up, he still, because he has faith in God, now have proven true. So we can bear witness that this man is righteous. His righteousness has proven true. Such are the people of truth, the God-fearing. God-fearing. So you say you really have taqwa? If you really have taqwa and you really have truth, you're really a just person and you fear God, then it should manifest in your life and the way you live. That's the verse on righteousness. One verse. Praise be to Allah.
Again, from same chapter, chapter 2, Surah Al-Baqarah. The verse 58. And remember, we said, who we? God. But when he speaks, everything in obedience to him bears witness. And everything serves his will. Huh? So like a ruler who speaks for his kingdom, he says, we will put you in jail. Now he don't do it with his hands, but he can start the thing put the thing in motion. He will put it in motion. And it'll be his order that brings it about. With God, he has complete control in everything. And remember, we said, enter this town and eat of the plenty therein as you wish. But enter the gate with humility, in posture and in words, and we shall forgive you your faults and increase the portion of those that do good. So you never can get away from the moral requirement. God is saying, you want to be the possessors of rich cities? Or you want to share in the riches of great cities? Aren't we people who need to get in? We are physically present in such cities as New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, but we are not really in. Now you might have one or two in, but as long as you are not represented as a group on the inside, in the power, in the responsibility, in the authority, etc., in the things that really matter and of great consequences. If you are not in there as a group, then the one that is in there from among you is in there as a representative of other people and not you. They're not right or wrong. If we don't have any command, any power, any authority, any influence that can be brought to bear from economic standpoint. From economic standpoint, from moral standpoint, from educational standpoint, from any standpoint, if we don't have one that we can stand upon and have command there, be an equal influence and an equal bargaining power there, then whoever we have there from among us, he is only a representative of them, though we call him our representative. Yes. When he speaks, he can't speak on the strength of us. When he speaks, he has to speak on the strength of the things that they have approved. So he said, hey, the law says this. The law says this. Oh, I got people who vote for you. And you owe them this. He doesn't have the strength. That strength is an appeal. That strength depends on their mercy, depends on their goodness. So they don't have to recognize the law. They can say, hey, well, I got your vote. I'll wait and see what happens next time. So it depends upon the goodness of the person, depends upon the law, what has been written. And the law is uncertain. Yes, the law is uncertain. Same people that made it can change it. Forces that be made it. Forces that be can change it. Yes? Okay. So you're not standing upon you're not in a situation wherein you're represented by your own strength or the strength of your people. But when people stand up to a representative, to a mayor, or governor, or president, or whoever,
and they're representing a group of people with money, with investments. They're representing a group of people whose labor or possessions or both of them account for the order staying intact, for the process is continuing, for the business continuing, for the good future being there. Oh, when they stand up, it's different. Because they're represented. They are really represented. So they will stand up and they will say, they don't have to take no thought. They don't have to take no back mouth, back talk. They say, look, okay, I represent such and such people. And here's what they mean to this town. Now you either respect us or you're going to suffer. We're going to get you out of office, or we will pull the props, the supports out from under you. Huh? And consequences like that brings about a response that is decent. Huh? And you get a decent response. All right. So you have to understand that we are people on the outside. I don't care how present we are in the cities of America or wherever we are people still on the outside. We're inside as far as getting recognition under the law. We're inside. But in the real practical sense, we're outside. Because we don't have possessions that are of real significance. So we on the outside. The medical profession, we're not even recognized in the medical profession or any other profession to be a threat to the profession. Right? If we pull out, we ain't hurting nobody. Pull out all the black doctors. You ain't hurting nobody. You haven't heard medicine. Hell no. And the white man, we thought we had a hold on in the work field. Well, the white man put us all on welfare. He said, you ain't heard nothing. Your idleness doesn't stop this country from going. Right. Right. Idle practically all of us. Right. Some places 60 and 70% unemployment. Right. And they ain't talking about those who've never been listed for employment. Right. They talking about those who just have a job record. Yeah, a lot of us don't understand that. We hear they talking about so many percentage unemployment. We think they talking about all of us. They talking about just those that have had a job record. And most of us have not had a job record. They never worked for nobody. They never had a job. Yes, fill out our applications and put your employment in. He's ashamed. Because all he did was work for a drink or a hamburger. And when he got enough money for that, he said goodbye to the employer. Yeah, just one paycheck. Just one paycheck and okay, goodbye. So he ain't got no job record. He wasn't there long enough to go on the books. So he ain't even counted in the job market. He ain't even counted in the statistics. He's not counted. Or you have to be there long enough to have insurance, Social Security count. You see? Now, we want to get in. Most of us want to get in. How are you going to get in? If you want to be successful, you want to get in? Enter humbly. Our people ain't got nothing. And when they want to protest or make a claim Or they stand up there like, you know, if you don't respond to them, they you know, they couldn't cut off the life of America. Hey, these people mean what they're saying, and they're really organized, and they're determined. They say, shoot, if you don't do something about these people, if you don't know them, if you don't do something about these people's complaints, they may cut the life of America off. And can't keep a candle burning. Right. I'm not talking about all of us. I'm talking about the people. Our people as a race can't keep a candle burning. Am I right or wrong? If you take a business of 25 people and you look at that business and you find that that business has been operating in the deficits, no profits, all deficits. No profits. And that business has been doing that for a generation. It has been doing it for a long time. It has consistently operated without a profit. Not a member is sustained of that cooperation or that business is sustained by what it has produced. When we study the business, we find that donations, gifts, etc., have made it possible for them to operate, and at no time were they able to operate without that kind of help. And at no time did a combination of them or one of them produce enough to take them out of that situation. Then you would have to say that that group was a financial failure. Huh? Were financial dependence on outsiders or others. Huh? As a race, we have never, sustained ourselves by our own efforts and labor. When we were a community of slaves, our work was profitable, but it was forced. It was forced. So we don't get credit for it. The slave driver gets the credit for it. We were productive under the slave driver. Then when the slave driver freed us, from that time on, we haven't been productive. We've been asking for more and more charity as time has progressed. To the point where we got such a reputation for asking for charity that they labeled us the welfare people. Huh? The welfare people. That's what they have labeled the African-American man or the African-American family, the race. The welfare people, the welfare generation. And now you can go among the house to house of the African-American people. It is hard to find a house that is employed and sustained by the employment. That's right. Hard. You'll find more on so many on welfare, you just give up. Right? That's the situation. And the ones that ain't on welfare, they're in crime. It's pitiful. So, we have progressed in many ways, but as a people, we haven't yet stood up on our own feet. We haven't yet acquired the dignity, the community dignity, that other ethnic groups have acquired. We don't have that community dignity. The poor Haitians came here and we were crying tears when we heard about their situation. But in no time, they have gotten the economic dignity. Huh? In no time. Ain't nobody crying the blues for the Haitians anymore. Haitians making money. The news came on the television of the Cubans that were released by Castro's regime. Castro's government. I don't like to call it a regime. His government is better than ours. I respect it.
I'm talking about how the black, the Negroes government. I ain't talking about the United States. I don't want you to think I'm talking about the United States. I'm talking about the Negroes government. His government is much better than the Negroes government. And I ain't make no mistake. Don't think that's a mistake. Imam is black, not Negro. No, I know. I'm saying Negro with a conscience. But anyway, those people that he released from prisons, from mental institutions, they have come over here from jailhouses and mental institutions. They have come over here and just took them a city. Say, Miami. Hello there. And put Miami in their pocket. And we've been here for 400 years. During the 200 or 300 years of slavery, we had a lot of opportunity to watch the ways of the white man, study his ways, so when we got free, we would be able to deal with him, compete with him. So we had 200 or 300 years to study the white man. Here, those people never was close enough to observe the white man. They ain't had a chance to study him to see his strong side, his strong points, his weak parts. Huh? They haven't had a chance to do that. They come here and in a few days, they got him down. They got him down. Yeah, we know where you at now. Okay, we come.